It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Now, you're listening to the Red Seat Podcast.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux. Featuring Keaton DeRocher and Bob Osgood.
Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, right play, it's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Hello and welcome to the Red Seat Podcast, episode number 293. This is your host, Bob Osgood, this week, and today I am joined by Keaton DeRocher, finally back with us after his long trek down under. Keaton, how you going, mate?
Yeah, I'm back. Good to be back. Trip in Australia was really fun. And I was sick. That part wasn't so fun. But work trip in Australia. Had a fun little weekend there. Got to go see the U.S. women's national team play Sweden. Even though they lost. Wow. Game was amazing, though. It was incredible. Atmosphere was amazing. It was so much fun. It was awesome just to be there. And then
great.
Something that I was not prepared for Australia was there's wild cockatoos everywhere. Just wasn't expecting that, which I suppose, like, I've seen cockatoos, seen people have them as pets, but just wasn't expecting them to be, like, everywhere. Like, they're like pigeons over there.
The birds over there are aggressive. They're in your face.
Yeah.
They're everywhere, and it's not like you get any when you get close to them that they move either. And just generally, the wildlife and the time that I spent there was, just not what you're used to in the Northeast. That's for sure.
It never really occurred to me though that, like, before people had cockatoos as pets, they were wild somewhere,
right?
And so it was just really funny to see them out and about.
Yeah,
that was fun. Yeah.
Well, that's great. I mean, going to a World Cup game, that's, not everyone gets a chance to do that. So that's awesome. It's good to have you back. We held down the fort without you, but, you know, we don't have Jake this week, but he'll be back next week. We'll have the full group here at some point once again. In the meantime, the Red Sox have continued to be the most mediocre team in baseball, even if they're 7 games over 500. Sure seems that way. Frustrating us in so many phases of the game. While also mixing in just enough wins and exciting play to keep us interested for another week. They're sitting at 69-62 entering play on Monday, which, while that's nice, it's not nice that they're 4.5 games out of a wild card spot, with Houston being the closest wild card team, and the Blue Jays in between, one more team that they'll have to pass just to get to the 4.5 games. But since our last episode a week ago on Monday, the Sox split 4 games in Houston, losing the first two, kicking the ball all over the ballpark, and then in the last two games taking advantage of some favorable pitching matchups, finishing things off with a 17-1 win on Thursday. Obviously, there was a huge series over the weekend as well, but we'll start with the Houston series. Keaton, we'll go to you. What have your thoughts been, whether that be about the Houston series or just the last month in general since we've last talked to you? Start it up.
Yeah. I'll say it was pretty painful being on a 15-hour flight during the trade deadline, with like real spotty, shitty internet. So just kind of going back the last month.
Yeah, that's going basically back a ways.
Our group chat with you guys constantly just talking about what was happening was the only update that I was getting on the day, and it was really stressful, which, of course, nothing really happened, so there was nothing to really stress about. But I will say, obviously, the Houston series started out poorly, losing the first two, but I thought it was strong and like a good sign for the Red Sox heading into the series against the Dodgers to come back and earn a split in that four-game series, especially being on the road against an extremely tough team. I thought to get a split was actually kind of a success, and to punctuate it with just an absolutely massive blowout win, I thought things seemed like they were, you know, kind of trending in the right direction, looking good. One thing that I had noticed recently, trending though, we were talking about this before we started recording though, is that it seems as if the Red Sox starting pitching and their lack of depth is now starting to kind of catch up to them a little bit, maybe bite them in the butt. They've had a string of starts where guys are either not going, their starters are not going deep into the game at all, or they are able to get to five or six and they're getting wrecked as they do it. And this is a really poor timing for that to occur, as they're slowly now losing ground. I feel like every week they're losing like another half game here, as I mean, the Mariners are on just an absolute tear right now, so that's not helping. And then that's pushed Houston and Texas, who are two teams that are also very, very strong now, into the wild card race, and those are not teams that you want to be looking up at because they are better than you. So that just kind of makes things even more difficult. And then to kind of, it feels like that lack of depth. I know that they were waiting for guys to come back and get healthy, and we just got Chris Sale back, but they're still basically building him up. Chris Sale going tonight. And they just got Tanner Houck back, who is still struggling to get deeper into games. They're still relying heavily on the bullpen to get through nine innings of a baseball game, and it's everybody else who they've been relying on, it's kind of catching up to them and becoming taxing on all the starters now. It's a really poor timing for that.
Yeah, and I think part of it a week and a half ago was Cora forcing the issue that, you know, as Sale and Crawford had some games where they got into jams in the fifth and he went right to the bullpen because they felt like must-win games. But as you play 17, 18 days in a row, whatever the stretch is, you can't do that the whole time. And then it started happening because the pitchers were actually getting lit up early in games and needing to be pulled in the fourth and fifth inning. And you mentioned that with Sale, and that's happening again tonight where he goes out and gets pulled in the fifth inning. And as we're seeing the score of what happened with Kyle Barraclough after that, this just happened before we started recording, you know, that's where it's tough, because the bullpen that you need to go to in the fifth inning, now you need to get four or five innings worth of outs, and you've got, you know, an already starting to break down group a little bit of relievers. You had Chris Murphy, who they needed to bring up a couple of times over the last 2 weeks. He comes up, he throws a game where he just kind of wears it, you know, goes four or five innings and then gets sent down the next day, that they've needed to work things like that in. And then if you're not ahead, then you're not using those high leverage relievers. And I think they probably needed to do that in one or two games and have a little more urgency over the last couple of days. We'll get into that later.
This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As we migrated more of our business to the cloud, we were seeing expenses go up, but we couldn't pinpoint the cause. It seemed less of a cloud, more of a fog. That's why we brought on Cloud Optimizer, and they saved the day.
Are you seeing your cloud hosting bills go up and you're not sure why? It's time to put Cloud Optimizer to work for you. Cloud Optimizer analyzes usage patterns, right-sizes resources, leverages discounts you may not be aware of, implements automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service.
With Cloud Optimizer, we have our spend under control. Our company is more agile, profitable, and we're getting peak performance from our cloud.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
But to your point, I mean, we had a couple of mailbag questions that we wanted to bring in early on. TJ McPhee asked us, and this was from last week. He said, why are the Red Sox being so careful with Brian Bayo's innings? He's hardly on pace to pass his total from last season. Are they still concerned about his elbow problems from spring training? And then we had another great question from Mark Daly, who said, do you consider going with a six-man rotation for the remainder of the year to get the best version of Paxton, who's better on 5 days rest, to keep Bayo's innings down, and to get the most from Sale? So I thought that there was kind of an interesting juxtaposition between those two questions. Let's start with you, Keaton. I don't know what you think about that, both with Bayo as well as the six-man rotation, and kind of how that fits into what you're talking about with the rotation issues.
They have Sale, who they're still building up. They have Hauk, who's been dealing with injuries. They have Bayo, who started the season dealing with injuries and is still, this would have been his first full season, so would have been his highest innings total yet. They have Paxton, who is basically pitching his first full season in three years. So, You want to be careful with that innings workload. They have a ton of fragile guys, and we're getting to the point in the season where those guys tend to break. So I think that makes sense to try and basically toe that line. And I think that plays into, for the majority of the season, I mean, we were just coming off a stretch of the season where it was 2 months. They had three starters.
Yeah.
And they
yep, that happened.
Yeah. Yeah, they relied on those guys heavily. So to try and give those guys a break as they're building up other guys on the fly, they kind of need those extra days off. So I think it makes sense. I think it's probably a little bit of both. They're still building guys up on the fly, and they have a ton of fragile guys that you don't want to be too overly aggressive with. So going with a six-man rotation will allow you to hopefully ease that burden, kind of help build those guys up, give these guys extra days now that we're very late in the season. And I mean, Paxton's really been the only one that's been there the entire time. But so you don't blow him out as he heads towards the stretch run here. I don't hate it. I think it's a pretty solid plan. I think there's a lot of pros there. I just feel like it tends to, I know you're going to talk about more in depth here about the bullpen usage, but it does kind of add more reliance on that as you're taking a guy that could potentially eat a bunch of innings out of the bullpen, out of that role. But I think right now it's probably more needed in the rotation, and it makes more sense for the long term to save those guys. So I think you should be able to piece together a bullpen that can get through nine innings. They just can't right now. So I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah, well, so I think that there's a couple of things. You know, when you have a five-man rotation where there's a clear number one, and you know, and it's a horse that can go 200 innings, you don't want to have a six-man rotation that makes that ace pitcher throw any less frequently than he would have. I don't think that's the case here. You just outlined all of it with kind of the fragility of some of these pitchers and some of the youth that they have. There's not that horse that you need to go to every fifth day. They kind of have the opposite. And to Mark's point about these guys throwing when they're on 5 days rest, you look at Paxton's numbers when he was on 4 days rest this year. In those four starts that he's done that, his ERA is 9.39. He's given up 16 earned runs in 15 innings. And walked 11 guys, had a whip of 2 when he throws on 4 days rest. When he throws on 5, he's 3-1 with a 1.95 ERA. And when he throws on 6 days rest, he's 4-1 with a 3.83 ERA. Bayo, another example, when he throws on 4 days rest, he's had 4 of those starts this year. He's 2-2 with a 5.75. When he throws on 5 days rest, he's 5-3. That's 12 starts with a 2.75 ERA. So I think that's the case for both of them. With Bayo, I mean, for TJ's question, with Bayo, yeah, he threw 153 innings combined a year ago between the minors and the majors. This year he has just one minor league start, six innings, and the majors 126. So he's at 132. He is going to pass what he got to last year, 153. You think he'll probably be around like the 160 to 165 range. I think it's important to remember that he's 24 years old and that they want him to be healthy for the next 5-6 years and possibly beyond, you know, if they end up working out some sort of arbitration contract to get an extra year or two on the other side. He could be a candidate for that. I think that they have been cautious with him, but they haven't been, I think they've been aggressive enough to throw him on every start. They haven't skipped his starts, but they haven't been reckless with him either. I mean, he's actually gone 7 full innings 6 times this year. You know, so that when he's going well, they let him throw. They let him throw 100, 105 pitches. But I think that they try to give him that extra day of rest. So they'll have an off day this week, and then they'll play 6 days in a row after that. And I do think that that would be a time for them to throw 6 different starters between this Friday and next Wednesday when they play Kansas City for 3 and Tampa for 3. You know, Paxton's going to throw on Friday. Maybe instead of having him throw that game on 4 days rest on the back end of that, they use Pivetta for one of those games and go with 6. And yeah, we're going to talk about the bullpen in a little bit more towards the Dodgers series, but I think it's a fair ask to do that just because of, you know, how this team has looked when they're, some of these pitchers have looked when they're on 5 days rest, look a lot better.
Yeah. Especially they need to find ways to, I mean, essentially like nickel and dime their ways to wins. They don't have a great schedule here to close it out, as we've seen with Houston, Dodgers, Houston. They've still got Tampa, Toronto, the Yankees left. So
yeah,
it's not going to be an easy trek to close it out here.
Some of the other things that happened in that Houston series, you know, we talked about Paxton. I guess for a positive note, Adam Duvall hitting home runs in the first 3 games of the series, before adding 2 more over the weekend and then adding another one on Monday night. So he earned Player of the Week honors, going 14 for 29 with 5 homers and 12 RBIs and 7 runs. Hit the game-winning home run on Thursday night after fouling a ball off his leg, you know, taking a walk for a couple minutes, and then hitting a bomb pitch or two later, which was something else in extra innings. Kenley Jansen left that game with hamstring pain. And then on Thursday, they had a season-high 17 runs and 24 hits, mostly off of J.P. France, who had a rough day, which we outlined on last week's pod, was kind of the guy that they definitely had to get to in that series, and had some late action off of the position player, the catcher. And, you know, as we mentioned, Bayo, he had 7 strong innings in that game, and gave them some length where they needed to rest the bullpen a little bit going into that weekend. But the guy I wanted to highlight there is Chris Martin. And, you know, the stretch that Chris Martin has been on since early June is pretty remarkable. You know, he's thrown 25 2/3 innings since June 9th, and he's only given up 1 run. And it's really just been, you know, outside of 1 run against the Giants, it's just been a whole lot of scoreless appearances that are usually pretty pain-free. Sometimes he's coming in with runners on base, sometimes he isn't. Came in a huge game against Houston and got a shutout inning, and then came in against the Dodgers and faced one batter and got a strikeout on Saturday. And actually, I tweeted something out the other day that was just in his last 28 appearances, how he has that 1 run allowed. But over the last year plus, right, since last year's trade deadline, when Martin was traded to the Dodgers, for all pitchers with a minimum of 60 innings, he has the best ERA in all of baseball for relievers. You know, 1.33 ERA. And the next best is Gratterall with the Dodgers at 1.71. That's a huge gap between that. So I wondered if Jansen had gone on the IL or was going to be out for any time. It seemed pretty clear that Martin would be the closer, just based on how great he's been for 3 months. You know, I don't know whether they would use him on back-to-back days. They've only done that 5 times all year. I thought Pivetta could be a possibility if Martin, you know, needed to go back-to-back or through too many days in a row. But it turns out that Jansen's probably going to be okay. Said he was available on Sunday. Looks like he's going to avoid the IL. But no, I just think we haven't talked about Chris Martin this year a whole lot. And for over a year now, he's been, ERA-wise, the best relief pitcher in baseball. So, anything else to add from that series, Keaton?
No, I think that pretty much wraps it up. I mean, the Martin note is a solid one. It's just, it's really helpful when you have a guy like that in the bullpen that just gets guys out and doesn't walk anybody. It's a super helpful weapon.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, going into the Dodgers series, who he had pitched for a year ago, you know, over the weekend, they came to Fenway. Everyone kind of knows a lot of the storylines there, that the NL West leading Dodgers, who now have 80 wins on the season, and returning a few ex-Red Sox players, and most notably Mookie Betts, who terrorized his former team all weekend, going 7-for-15 with a home run on Sunday, and he had a walk as well, so he was on base half the times he got to the plate during the 3-game series, which was no surprise to any of us. And then Freddie Freeman as well went 7-for-13 with 2 walks. He was on base at a 600 clip, getting on 9 out of 15 times. Just an impossible duo to get out. I mean, you can't walk both of them. And every game, they were on base early and often, getting big hits early and late. And it was just that team, when they are rolling, is something else. And just the stretch that Betts has been on for a month or so. You know, Friday. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's just Mookie Betts is so good at baseball.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed impossible that anybody could rival Ronald Acuna for the MVP this year. I mean, this is a guy that easily could get 35 homers and 70 steals. And you say, you know, what could rival that? No one is even close. And then this guy's hitting pretty much like 500 for the last month. And the number of games that he gets up to lead off in the top or the bottom of the first with a home run, he's already matched his career high in homers this year. He has 35 or 36, and we're not out of August yet. So it's just crazy. And it was tough to watch. It wasn't surprising. We don't have to rehash that whole story again. There's been plenty of shows all week that are doing that, and that'll just get us all fired up and add 30 minutes to the show. But, you know, on Friday, Nick Pivetta struggled a little bit, coming in for Cutter Crawford, giving up 4 runs, I believe, just gave up a lot of hits. And then that game kind of had some poor base running late with Connor Wong getting caught coming around second base on a relay throw, and just another story, you know, of bad defense and bad base running that we've seen this whole past week that could easily be the reason that they are 4.5 games back and not tied for the last wildcard spot for both of those reasons. On Saturday, we saw Adam Duvall hit that big 3-run homer to go ahead. Max Muncy called out on the questionable pitch when Chris Martin, the one batter that he faced, and then John Schreiber coming in the ninth and getting Mookie to fly out with the bases loaded and 2 outs. And man, that was something. That was some high drama on Saturday. But then Betts put the game out of reach on Sunday, before some late home runs from Justin Turner, who continues to just be on fire. 2 more homers this past week. Adam Duvall homered in that game as well. So your thoughts from the Dodgers series, and before we talk about the bullpen a little bit, what were your takeaways? And it was really entertaining series, for better or worse.
Yeah, it was. It was really nice to see Mookie kind of have his return to Fenway. It seems like it took a really long time for him to come back, but, that was nice. There is, as you pointed out, like pretty much every outlet everywhere, was milking that story. There was still posting stuff today. I think it was Bradford posted a clip from David Ortiz about talking about how he thought Mookie should have been here for a while, so there's everybody was milking that entertainment because they knew that was going to get clicks and views, and
yeah,
sure did. But we don't have to go too much. I feel like that's, as you pointed out, it's overdone. We don't need to add another half hour to this podcast. But
yeah,
you're right. It was an entertaining series, but that I think again we had Paxton go four. We had Hout go four innings. Carter Crawford really kind of had the best start. Went five. Wasn't really able to go much deeper than that. And then it was just turned over to the bullpen, which had its struggles, and then obviously was without Jensen until Sunday, and then wasn't used wasn't needed. So I think that it just kind of continued to highlight that deficiency there with the starting pitching running out of steam and not being able to get deep into games, even though they are going with the 6-man rotation now and kind of trying to be careful with guys. They're still struggling to get deep into games, and I think that's going to be something to keep an eye on as we keep going here, that with extra days off and a 6-man rotation, if they're still not able to get deep into games, that's going to become a huge problem.
Yeah, and Pivetta had, since May 21st, he had a 3.07 ERA. He had really been pitching well. And it's one of the first times, maybe the second time in the last two and a half months that Pivetta, I guess 3+ months, that Pivetta really got hit hard. And, you know, of course, we mentioned just how good of a offense it is, but it was a big spot there. He had a couple of walks, and he just really didn't look good at all in that game. I think the one that kind of bothered me a little bit was the game on Sunday, where after they had hit a home run in the bottom of the, what was it, the bottom of the sixth, Tristan Casas at 4-2. You know, you only had to get through three more innings of that game, and I feel like it was such a big game, you know, where they really just have to take series at this point. And the bullpen was not that overused. I mean, Jansen was available on Sunday, and he obviously hadn't pitched in a few days since the injury. Chris Martin had only thrown four pitches on Saturday. Pivetta probably was down for a couple of days after throwing a lot on Friday. And same for Whitlock being down, throwing a lot on Saturday. But I think that they had to go back to, you know, the Winkowski, Martin, Jansen, 7th, 8th, and 9th at that point, with it being a 4-2 game. Leaving Chris Murphy out there, he gave up a run in each of those four innings, and the game was over quickly. So you've got that, and then that rolls into today. All right, you've got a fresh bullpen. Sure, Kyle Bearclaw is up. He's replacing Murphy at this point because he was sent down between the two games. Sale comes out. It's a big spot in the fifth and sixth. You've got the lead, and Bearclaw's given up 5 or 6 runs in this game. And sure, we're not watching it, but I think I can understand the scenario and the situation of the game that, you know, if they didn't do this yesterday, well, now everybody was rested. They, you know, they didn't throw any of these guys. Everybody was ready to throw this game today. And you have to have it. If you weren't going to go with your A bullpen yesterday, you have to have the game on Monday. And I just kind of find the way that Cora has managed the bullpen the last couple of days with a lack of urgency to be a little bit frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, you laid that out perfectly. We're at the point in the season now where you're not managing the bullpen for just today. You're like, these decisions are going to start rolling into the next game and the next game. And especially with just the way that the roster is constructed right now, that choosing to use a guy or not is going to affect the next couple games. And hopefully it works out. Obviously, it bit him in the ass here over the past couple days. And these were games that, against really tough opponents, where you really didn't want that to happen. And you just hope that that doesn't continue. But, I mean, the biggest thing that we've talked about with Cora is his ability to manage a bullpen, so I don't have a ton of confidence that that's going to get corrected. I feel like that's just how it's going to be here over the last month. And it's going to be very frustrating.
Yeah, and there are games where they get back within a run, and you can tell it's like, you know, really wants this game because it's a big game in the series. And I felt like Sunday had that. And then Monday, if you weren't going to do it, you had to there. And he didn't. And now you're looking at a situation, as we see the score continue to get worse throughout this game, where you're five games in the loss column behind Houston. And you have to take those next two games. We'll talk about the schedule a little bit. You know, you can look at this and think that the season is likely kind of starting to be over as they get closer to a 10% chance at a playoff spot. But I don't think they've given up. And I look at the schedule, and the only thing that gives you an ounce of hope is that the wildcard teams in front of you, the three that are in and the one team in front of you that isn't in, are Tampa, Texas, Houston, and Toronto. And you play all four of those teams in the next month, you know, starting today. So you need the next two games against Houston, right? They're in a lot of trouble if they lose two out of three. These become must wins. So they play three at home against Houston, and then they head to Kansas City, and then they have Tampa. Kansas City's looked pretty terrible lately, losing a couple games to Oakland. They're behind against Pittsburgh tonight, and they seem to have kind of mailed it in. So you have to go on a run starting tomorrow, or we're probably going to be back after Labor Day talking about how let's see these September call-ups and what they're going to have to offer.
I didn't even mention Baltimore. We had seven games against Baltimore.
Yeah.
This last month is just a minefield of a schedule. And like you said, it's like silver lining that you have games against the teams that you're looking up against. But on the other hand, they're very good baseball teams.
Yes. You said it earlier. They're all better than you.
Yeah. It's not going to be easy. It's like, no. Yeah, you hold your fate in your own hands, but that's not necessarily a good thing.
No. The only reason why I say it is because when you go on a good run like they did against some of those lesser teams, and you look around and everyone else is winning, at least you can control that when you play those teams. That's really the only point there. But let's talk about some of the transactions that were made on Monday. You know, we mentioned how Murphy had been up for a day, and it was a result of Bernardino being placed on the COVID IL, and then Barraclough is up today, and he's probably going to be back down tomorrow after this one. Pablo Reyes went on the 10-day IL, and Willy Abreu was placed on the paternity list, so we see a couple of call-ups here between David Hamilton, who we saw earlier this year, and for the first time, Seydon Rafaela, outfielder, plays a little bit of shortstop as well, recalled from the minors, and this is exciting. I mean, this is a guy that we've talked about plenty this year, talked about plenty on our old, you know, minor league podcast that we did, and you know, Keaton, this is a guy who has spectacular defense. Highlight reel catches in the minor leagues that when these things get posted on Twitter, when you see his name attached to it, it's a must watch. And the thing about Rafaela defensively, because I think that's what we should highlight first, is just he makes these catches, diving catches, catches in the gap, going back, going forward to the side, doesn't matter. He gets up ready to throw. You know, he's ready to throw home. He's ready to throw behind guys to get double plays. It's crazy how quickly he gets into position and how he expects to then get up and make a good throw. You know, that's kind of been my biggest takeaway to watching some of the highlights of Rafaela. But, you know, this is somebody who kind of hit marginally at double A this year, but got the call up because he had been there for a full calendar year. You know, he was hitting .294, but he had 6 homers, 37 RBIs. In 60 games. Well, since he got to Worcester, he's got 14 homers and 42 RBIs. He's ramped it up. He's hitting .312. His WRC plus is .138 in the 48 games at Worcester. So what do you think about the call-up of Rafaela?
I like it. And especially the last month, .305, .380, .632. 8 homers. That's pretty great. That's a lot of fun. And 4 steals on 6 attempts. That's pretty nice. Obviously, love the ability to play the infield and the outfield. It'll be interesting to see where they go. But, you know, the move was made in conjunction with Pablo Reyes, who's the infielder. But they also have Duran, and his weird toe that they can't figure out, which is a little confusing. But so they are, I guess, also technically down an outfielder, so he could kind of bounce back and forth there. But I'm just, he's just torn it up really like the last 2 years. And seeing him be able to continue that through the upper levels of the minors this year is really awesome. So I'm just excited to see him take the field and to see what he can do. And I'm just really interested to see how they end up deploying him over this last month, what spots he ends up taking on the field, and maybe that'll give us a glimpse into what his role might be for next year. So I'm really just interested just to watch and take it in and see what he can do. But I think this is the kind of call-up that teams that are in the Red Sox position need to make to add a spark, and he's the kind of guy that can provide it. So if there's some hope there, if there's something that can provide them a jolt to get through this hellscape of a schedule, I think he's it.
He, it's tough because it seems like it should have happened earlier in the month. It seems like they needed a spark, and it seems like the defense was so bad that it probably should have happened earlier in the month. The problem was they had such a logjam in the outfield and the way that Jaren Duran had been playing, although he kind of struggled as August went on and then got injured, as you mentioned. But it's just, you know, with the way that Duvall is hitting and Verdugo has been better lately, and, you know, yeah, Yoshida's slumping and actually kind of been sitting a little bit more. But did it make more sense to have him come up and just get sporadic playing time, or to get a few more at bats down there? You know, it's a tough question. I think just with how bad let's go into Patty O'Dea's question, which goes along with this pretty well. I think we can all agree that this team is awful defensively, he says. If the team was better on defense, would they currently have a wild card spot? Currently 4.5 games back, do you think that defense has cost us those games? I mean, what do you think, Keaton? Do you think that that would have made up 4 or 5 games between the countless hours we've talked about shortstop in the middle infield this year, but also, you know, if Rafaela had played some of those innings in the outfield?
I guess you did ask me like 6 questions, so which one am I saying yeah to?
Would they still be 4.5 games back? Would they be even?
No.
if there was a different defense that was out there?
Yes, that I firmly believe that the terrible defense just probably cost them like 8 to 10 games.
8 to 10.
Yes, I think it's been that. Well, maybe that is dramatic, but 4.5. Yeah. Probably, yeah. They're probably
it feels
a wild
like
card
it.
Spot. Yeah, it's been that bad.
Yeah, I mean, there might be 8 to 10 games where it was a complete shit show out there defensively.
Yeah.
If that cost them 8 to 10 games, I don't know. But yeah, it's got to be at least half of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the snowball effect, right? If you have 3 errors in the first, and you all of a sudden you're down 7-0. You never had a chance. If you don't make those errors, you have a chance to win the game. So, I mean, it's very possible to say that I don't think it's unfathomable to think that if they had, average defense up the middle, and maybe even toss in Devers Casas too. He's been a lot better now, but he had a rough transition the first half, right? So.
Yes.
Really, all the infield defense as a whole, if had that been improved, would they be 4.5 games back for wild card? No, I don't think so. I don't think, obviously, I don't think Rafaela was there to provide any of that up to this point, because obviously he was still working his way up in the minors. So I don't think he was an option. But, I mean, time and time again, we talked about how shortstop and second base, they were failing miserably, and they didn't seem like they had a plan, or their plan was just to wait it out and hope it got better, and it just never did.
Yeah. We talk about outs above average a lot, so let's look at defensive runs saved instead. Red Sox are 27th in the league with -25 defensive runs saved. In center field, that's -8. In left field, that's -7. At second base, it's -9. At third base, it's -9. Shortstop's -2, which is a little surprising. I'm sure that's come up recently. The only positions that are positive are catcher and right field. So, 25 runs in the negative, right? It's probably 4 or 5 games at least. So, yeah, I don't know. That's kind of what is it was becoming more apparent. I mean, we've been annoyed by the defense the whole year. So if you've got that many positions where you're getting negative production, you have to find a position where you might not get as much with the bat. Maybe you do with Rafael, who knows, but that you get more with the glove. And, you know, it seems like it's the right time. And with it being the 28th of August, I think rosters expand from 26 to 28 on the 1st. So with Abreu on the paternity for 3 days, I'm sure this will roll right into the expansion that he was going to come up anyways, and it just ends up being 3 days earlier, right?
So you want to know why shortstop is only at -2?
Oh, let's hear it. What am I missing?
Trevor Story is already a +3.
Right.
That'll do it.
God. I know. So if you just had zero, something that was close to zero up until that point, and then get Story back. Yeah, I know. I mean, he makes the tough play look so easy. Thank you. I needed that context. I can't believe that they've already closed that gap already.
That is incredible.
I know.
It took him 100 innings. That's it, 100 innings.
Yeah. It's a good sign for next year.
Yeah.
And I mean, but that's the thing here, is that this is going to be a much better defensive team up the middle starting next year. And it makes what they did this year, ignoring that, so frustrating. Couple other questions from Patty O.D. as we head to the mailbag portion of the show here. Would there be so much vitriol about Mookie if they had just let him walk instead of trading him? What do you think of that question? They just let him go as a free agent.
Because that still says that they didn't pay him and should have.
I don't think it would have been as bad. I think the fact that they kind of proactively a year early said, well, this isn't going to happen, and never made an effort, whether it was a true effort or not, or Xander Bogaerts.
Well, that's true, I guess.
Would I still be mad? Yes. No. But not on this level.
I think yes, but just in a different way, right? Because, like, everyone's mad at the front office that didn't pay him who should be here, right? If they let him walk, everyone's mad at the front office, and they're like, how can you be that stupid? If you're going to let him walk, you could trade him 12 months ago, when, right? And then they're mad at the front office for that. For getting nothing out of him.
Right. Well, that's what the Angels are running into with Ohtani right now. And that's the opposite end of the argument, right?
I mean, you know, they tried, though. They made deals at the trade deadline.
Right.
They weren't expecting Ohtani to blow his elbow and Trout to go on the IL and every one of their trades to completely implode.
No, it's been a train wreck.
Yeah.
It did. But that might be the argument for not making that, you know, the effort that they did to see where that has gone since that point, and then losing the prospects that you traded. No, I wouldn't make that argument, but in that case,
there's a lot larger, like, organizational issues that have come out since then about, like, they don't believe in, like, fitness and nutrition and expect everybody to do all of that on their own, and like they don't invest in like proper workout equipment, and it's a disaster over there.
It's not good.
So there's a bit more to it than just they're not going to get anything from Ohtani.
Yeah. His final question, and all you have to do is split up the partial seasons for Ryan Brazier between Boston and Los Angeles. He says, why can't we get pitchers like that great Dodger reliever, Ryan Brazier? I mean, you look at that, and that is a great reliever. I mean, he's right. That is a great Dodgers reliever who has a 0.99 ERA in 27 and a third innings since going to Los Angeles. Came in and easily got out of things in the eighth inning on Sunday. Nine strikeouts per nine, 2.3 walks per nine, 185 BABIP given up compared to a 344 BABIP. So maybe there was some bad luck here, but there was also some bad pitching here that, again, we've talked about ad nauseum. But that's another name while they were here to get one more kick in the junk before leaving.
Yeah. It is very interesting. Obviously, we've seen the Dodgers now. Houston had, obviously, their run with this as well. And Tampa, that they bring guys in and they strip. There's a ton of players. Somebody was actually just recently talking about, I was just trying to dig it up real quick, but I couldn't find it. Was actually like talking about this specifically with relation to the Dodgers too. Now I just can't remember who it was. But they bring guys in and basically say, here's what you're good at, and we just want you to do a lot of this and focus on that. And that basically elevates their stuff, which was the same. Who's the guy that wrote the book about the Houston Astros?
Frelick?
Yes. That was like the whole premise of his book about how the Astros were getting the most out of these guys. And the same thing that Tampa does. And obviously, you know, the Friedman connection there with the Dodgers, that's what they do as well. And they're really, really good at it. And it just seems like this is just another one of those cases where they're asking Brazier to do just that one thing that he's really good at, and he's having a lot of success. But it's nuts how much that is like talked about as a way to develop players. Everybody in the league is aware of it, but so many teams are so bad at it. Like just being able to identify what those guys are good at and basically elevate that piece of their game is so incredibly hard.
The combination
and that's
what
the Red Sox are hoping they're getting from Bloom, right? Is that they pulled him out of Tampa to be able to identify those guys and get the most out of those guys. And obviously with Brazier, that was a failure. And now he's thriving with the Dodgers. It's kind of like a kick in the pants.
Right. I mean, the Dodgers' ability to not only develop players, but also sign the right players to have such a deep farm system that they can use for trades. And then what you said, bringing in cast-offs like Ryan Brazier and getting the most out of them as well. And, you know, Joe Kelly is there thriving again, although he was injured this week. Look what happened to Lance Lynn. I don't know if it's a motivation thing or what, but he's been much better since he's gone there.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, there's solid culture there and just a lot that they're doing right. And as you said, will they get there in Boston? Who knows? But it doesn't seem close just yet. Our other question, TJ McPhee had a couple today. The other one was about this past year being a lost year for Tanner Houck and Garrett Whitlock. He was talking about 2022, and he said that 2023 is shaping up similarly. Do we still not know who these two pitchers really are yet? And it's a good point because I think this offseason, when we are previewing the roster and, you know, what are the needs, we're going to be asking the same questions. Is Tanner Houck a starter or a reliever? Is Garrett Whitlock a starter or a reliever? And what can you count on and how many innings can you count on out of them from these players? I think it's a great point that we still don't exactly know what the best role is for either of them.
Yeah, no, we don't.
Right, last one, Lurchamus, which ended up being a very appropriate question because he sent this morning and said, who's going to play the outfield next year? And is Rafaela looked at as a platoon center fielder or a defensive replacement to pair with Jaron Duran? Cheers to 2024, fellas. So I think Lurchamus has given up on the 2023 season. And then a couple hours later, we got the news that Rafaela had been called up. So that was also a great question. People brought the heat with the questions through Gmail and Twitter as well. But what do you think? Let's start with you, Keaton. Do you what do you think is playing the outfield? Who, I mean, there's still going to be a logjam, even with Adam Duvall if he leaves in free agency.
Yeah-ish. I mean, we still have an opening at second, right?
For Rafaela, you think?
For anyone.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, that's one option, is yeah. that they move him to play the infield.
Or we have even more of an opening, obviously, now with Kike gone.
Yeah. I think the fact that Rafaela plays an 80-grade defense in center field, you know, I want him there. I want the next Jackie Bradley, and I think that that's not a stretch that he can be that. If I had to guess, I think it's probably Yoshida and Rafaela and Duran and some sort of Adam Duvall type that could be brought in as a platoon. You've got Ref Snyder to hit right-handed to platoon with some of those, you know, Yoshida and Duran types. We know he signed for another year. And I think that Verdugo potentially ends up being moved after the season with 1 year left.
That's now, what I was just going to say, too, was yeah. Verdugo having the best year of his career, and it also doesn't seem like they have actually attempted to approach him about an extension. It seems like that's his fate here yeah. with the Sox, that he'll get moved here in the offseason, and that'll end up freeing up that spot along with Duvall taking off. And then you've got two center fielders to handle your two center fields over there in right and center.
Exactly. I mean, the right field being just as difficult, if not more. It's interesting you say that about Verdugo, because we were talking on one of the shows while you were away about how he's just going to have the same season that he's always had. But then he's ramped things back up over the last 3 weeks. And that probably was worth talking about in the Dodgers series, him having those couple of leadoff home runs. He's had a few of them in recent weeks. Definitely wanted to kind of ramp things up a little bit with all the talk of Mookie coming back. Well, he was playing against his old team for the first time as well, and it was at Fenway. And he came out with a big hit in each of those games. He had a great catch tonight. I think that since he got benched and all of that happened a couple, what's that, probably 3 weeks ago now, that Verdugo's played a lot better. It just seems like that's going to happen a couple times a year, and it would, you know, whether he's here this year or not, I think it behooves everybody that he has a good August and a good September and has that trade value up if he does end up getting moved, you know. And if not, then hopefully in his age 28 year, they can get one more good year out of him in the outfield. But I think that that might be the most likely path to kind of have a spot for Rafaela, because I think that he's going to, with what he'll bring defensively and what they're going to probably try to overcompensate for after the defense this year, I think they have to have him out there next year. So, all right, anything else to add this week? Did I forget anything?
Nope, I think that's it.
All right. You can follow Keaton at The Spoken Keats on Twitter. You can follow me at BobOsgood15. You can tweet us. You can send in Gmail questions at redseatpodcast@gmail.com. We got several this week that were great, so please keep those coming. And we will talk to you next week. Thanks for joining.